Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Method and the Muse. I'm your host, Sherry Wiles. Today, we're going to have guest author Rick O'Donovan. Writers, I just want to know, are you stuck or blocked or inspired on a roll and tearing it up? Is your latest accomplishment publicizing your most recent bestseller, finishing the 265th revision of your first poem, or just making the commitment to writing? Whatever your state of mind, this show is for you. The Method and the Muse is all about what happens at the writer's desk. Our conversations with writers from all categories and genres will give you plenty of ideas for firing up your own writing life and sharpening your craft. Today, we're going to be dialoguing about dialogue with Rick O'Donovan. Hi, Rico. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you, Sherry.
That's great. What we do here is we dig deep with our authors into one area, and today it is on dialogue, which Rico's going to tell us from his perspective, his thoughts about dialogue. And also, I did want Rico to have a chance to tell us a little bit about himself. I'm going to tell you what I know, and then he can share some things. He is an award-winning singer-songwriter who plays a variety of stringed instruments, a hammered dulcimer virtuoso, silent film composer, and a critically acclaimed novelist. His debut novel, Sunnyville, made Nashville Lifestyle Magazine's 2014 Summer Reading List picks. The Broken Promised Land, which he began in 1994, was completed and published in 2014. And how can we find you on the web and find you, Rico?
Well, first and foremost, the website is rickodonovan.com, easy enough to remember. And Facebook-wise, there's an author page, same way, Rick O'Donovan Author. So I try to keep it simple.
Okay, good.
My online And soon I'll be blogging.
Okay, good. Good for blogging. Is there anything else you want us to know about you?
I'd rather be secretive.
Okay. Why are you on here?
I am currently working on short stories, as you mentioned, the novels. But,
okay. Well, wonderful, wonderful. Well, as we're dialoguing about dialogue, one thing I know that I would love to start off with is hearing some dialogue. So from your book. And so tell us what you're going to read for us today.
Okay. Well, in regards to that, Sherry, I'm here to spring a little surprise on you.
Oh no.
Because we're going to be reading a piece from my novel Sunnyville.
Okay.
And it's a scene between a soon to be 100-year-old lady, which will be played by me, and a 14-year-old teenager, which will be played by
me. I guess so. I guess I'm the only person in the room with us right now. Okay.
So will we give it a whirl?
We'll give it a whirl. Let's
okay.
do it.
Yours are the highlighted bits.
Oh, great. I get to start out.
Yeah.
Melinda walked into the kitchen, stretching her arms and yawning, saying that the thunderstorm woke her up in the middle of the night. They sat down to breakfast. A good book kept her up long past midnight, and for a little while, she imparted some of the story to Flora. What did Flora like to read, she asked. Flora replied that for many years, the Bible had comprised most of her reading. She liked a good murder mystery. She read biographies of people she found interesting. I think you're way interesting, Nana.
In what way?
You're so mellow. Nothing gets to you.
I get tired and retired. There's nothing left to get me but old age, and I'm already pretty well past that one. Now it's just a matter of waiting to die.
Do you think you'll go to heaven?
I don't know. I don't trouble over it much.
Well, just don't die before Saturday. That pretty much puts the kibosh on the party.
Flora slapped at the girl's hand. Silly. Melinda fidgeted with the tablecloth.
Do you believe in an afterlife?
Well, all I know is if I'm going to go to a higher place, I sure hope I get a new body to carry myself around in, Flora sighed. All new parts.
Doesn't it matter to you?
Matter to me. Maybe when I was young.
How about now?
There was a marked urgency in the girl's tone. I don't know. It's kind of a wait and see, isn't it? Melinda nodded ruefully and said,
sometimes I want to end it all right now.
Oh, hush. Don't talk such nonsense.
I mean, when I see the lives my mom and dad lead, how wretched, all they ever do is work like crazy and they still worry about money. It's all they ever talk about. They steer every topic of conversation to money.
Well, your life might just turn out different. If it bothers you so much, I don't see why it wouldn't. But money does matter, sweetheart. Trust me, money matters.
And, Melinda continued, I see some of the beauty in the world. I see the people who set about trying to capture it, see inside it, live in it, and then I don't want to die.
Let's talk. Put them dying thoughts out of your worrisome little head, young lady. They'll only stop you living. Melinda thought about this for a while. She drummed her fingers on the table.
I haven't even fallen in love yet.
There, you see? Flora nodded resolutely, pushing herself upright to begin clearing the table. Now that's something to look forward to, I guess. Oh, by the way, she called over her shoulder as she shuffled toward the sink. Your mother's coming a day early.
As in when?
Tonight.
What?
Flora heard the scuffle of the chair, and in an instant the girl was hugging at her, arms around her bony shoulders and head pressed to her back.
Please say it isn't so.
Now pull yourself together. Surely it's not as bad as all that.
But... I like how it is, Nana. Now.
Well, your mother and I have a whole lot of catching up to do. You can go off meantime and do your little things.
You won't tell her about the meds, will you? I mean, not taking them at all.
I don't see as why I shouldn't.
No, please, Nana, not right now. She'll have a cow. I'll tell her when I get back.
When she gets back, thought Flora. She hadn't given a lot of thought lately to the relatively brief duration of the girl's visit. When I get back. The words made a painful stab at her spirits. She was beginning to get used to having someone around. There was an unspeakable void that she somehow hadn't noticed, a vague emptiness in her day-to-day existence before Melinda arrived, and the girl's presence had simultaneously drawn attention to it and filled it. Well, how do you expect me to keep it from her?
I'll just palm them. We can even leave the bottles on the dresser. She doesn't watch me take them.
Well, that sounds logical enough. We'll make the best of things.
I've got anxiety big time.
Well, don't get yourself all worked up, young lady. These things usually turn out better than you expect. Look at the bright side. Now you've got a bocce ball partner.
Anna, you want to read Outer Dark? I think you'd like it. It's all about the Depression in Appalachia, you know, and this girl gets pregnant and has to run away, and then she finds out her brother...
Well, now don't go spoiling the story.
Okay.
Leave it on my dresser. I only ever read in bed.
Well, tell us about that scene and how you feel like that dialogue moved the story along and developed characters.
Well, that scene was, I think, early on in the novel. And it was early on in establishing this relationship between a great-great-great-grandmother and a great-great-great-grandchild, which... was really done through kind of conversations like this.
Do you have any other pointers on how you feel like dialogue can be a character development?
Yeah, that's very important. Dialogue is an element of character development, a very important one that goes along with I feel it's the one of the best ways that characters reveal themselves. And I think two ways in writing is words and action. So the dialogue can tell a lot about a character without a lot of the expository that some expository is important in telling about a character, but you don't want to do too much telling. Mm-hmm. So in that way, I think dialogue is going to teach the reader about a person, same way as in real life, mm-hmm. what people say.
Mm-hmm. When you're writing dialogue, what do you find helps to keep the reader interested in it, and how much do you feel like has to go into that dialogue to keep it interesting, and do you break it up, and how does that all play out?
Sure. I like to break it up, and I think you're most going to take a reader's attention. I can speak for myself as a reader by having the dialogue. Obviously, we all want the dialogue to be natural, not stilted or to sound you want it to sound the way people speak, and maybe on to that point, one recommendation I've received myself and I pass along to other writers of prose, be it short story or novel, is when writing a scene that's heavy on dialogue, or for that matter, all dialogue, it helps a tremendous amount to read it out loud to yourself. It's absolutely almost a necessity. Because when you see it, it's one thing, but when your ears are listening to your dialogue, they'll tell you if something sounds the way people talk or not.
Mm-hmm. And when I've read both your books and some of your short stories, and I know in some instances you have chosen to not use quotation marks in your dialogue. Tell us a little bit about that and what influenced you on that and why you liked that for those particular books.
Right. And actually, on that point, the short stories I'm working on currently, I'm using quotation marks in those. So I don't know if it's story dependent, but I do have a sense that I regard novel in some way as more storytelling. And along those lines, I felt, particularly when I was drafting Sunnyville, that I really enjoyed the storytelling feel. And in that sense, when I did away with the quotation marks, I had to, and between me and my happy editors, we had to figure out a way to not make it have the reader work, that they would have to go back and reread to understand who's speaking. So there's a structural thing that you need to do on the heels of your first drafts and things like that. That's a necessity. But in general, the only thing I can think is that to my ears and my eyes when I read the novels, I wouldn't have done them with quotations. It seems that it has this storytelling aspect to it when you pull the punctuation off. And as far as being inspired by that, there are writers who have chosen that form that I read tremendously, along with tons of others that do. But what one that came to mind when I was thinking about it today was James Frye. Mm-hmm. There's a book he wrote called Bright Shiny Morning, and it just in the same way kind of led itself to storytelling, and much in the same way Cormac McCarthy, who I think I hope a lot of us have read, but Cormac famously is really, I don't think he's ever placed him in any of his novels.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if you have an editor or someone critiquing or beta reading your book, and they do have to go back and they tell you, I wasn't sure about who was speaking, what do you do to tweak that and fix that? What specifically can you use to make that work? I know it depends on the scene, but.
Right. Now I'm going to jog my memory for things. But one thing that immediately comes to mind that I saw was if you're writing a paragraph, and you've got some dialogue mixed in with expository, to begin the dialogue with a direct object like I or you, it immediately clues the consciousness in that someone's speaking, because narration does not incorporate the word I or you, unless you're writing in second person, which And another thing that helped a lot was just putting little colloquialisms in front of the spoken part, like well or things that kind of clue the reader in immediately that someone's talking.
It seems like to me any books that I've read, whether yours or other authors that have chosen that stylistically, once you kind of get used to it, it does start to flow for the reader very well. It does take a little bit of getting used to it first, but then it seems to usually be clear, particularly when it's got those hints and things, you don't have to go back. And
Yeah, another point to that I just thought of, oh, wow, that it actually helped me. It's different for everybody, but for me it helped make my dialogue more natural by pulling out the quotes. Uh-huh. I don't know why. Perhaps it's that when I was writing, I didn't have the quotes around, say, oh, now somebody's talking. We've got a whatever. It seemed that it made the whole thing kind of run natural.
Mm-hmm. And then the next question I wanted to ask you, do you have any other tips about dialogue or anything else you want to tell us about dialogue? And then we'll get a little bit more into what inspires you in writing. But tell us if there's anything else you want us to know about dialogue and conversation.
We've already mentioned the reading your dialogue out loud, mm-hmm. which I had an old songwriter friend of mine, a guy named Lonesome Bob, said to me, we were talking about songwriting, but he said something I carried into my prose. He said, just when you're out in public, just keep your ears open. People say the strangest things. Mm-hmm. And to that, I would say sometimes I've sketched out scenes or I've gone to the place where the scene is, mm-hmm. it could be a poolside, it could be a beach, it could be a Greyhound station. Mm-hmm. But you just overhear things and you will get so much. And in the process too, it's the way everybody's talking out there. Mm-hmm. So,
let's move a little bit now to the muse part, and we may come back to some other things about the actual method. But I wanted to ask you too. I know that you wrote some of these books in places not Nashville. When you wrote them, you weren't here in Nashville. You were other places. Tell us how the place where you were helped inspire your book, Broken Promised Land or Sunnyville.
Right. So. Sunnyville was written largely here in Nashville, a little bit in Texas, while I was recovering from surgery. And the model for that book was really set at where an over 55 retirement community where my mom was, and my visits down there to my mom. And just really partying with all the old folk. And so that for some reason, I was inspired to write that. It's not something, believe me, I spent years as imagining novels that I would write with more exotic locations than a retirement community in Florida. But I think what it did was, you pull a more sort of, dare I say, mundane or just a very common location, nothing spectacular about it, and it pushes your writing because there are stories in those places, and when you can write them, I think it's great. A lot of the feedback I got on the book was that people enjoyed finding out what's going to happen to these characters. Mm-hmm. And as far as the Broken Promised Land, a lot of that was done here. A lot was done in Ireland.
You were doing what while you were in Ireland in addition to writing a book?
Oh, just doing music for a living and flying around by the seat of my pants.
You were there how long?
About 7 years.
Right.
I went for 2 weeks, stayed for 7 years.
Yeah, see, people that go to Ireland would all love to do that, I think, and stay for a long time. So you were in Ireland when you wrote Broken Promised Land, and how did that affect or make it easier for you to write or harder being in Ireland?
Yeah, I think... The crux of it was that the seed of the idea was actually in Tennessee, and particularly a workshop I attended for about 6 years back in the 90s that was in Appalachia, in North Carolina, just about an hour north of Nashville. Asheville.
What was it called, the workshop, do you know?
Wild Acres Writers Workshop.
Is that still a workshop?
It's still a very good workshop. I haven't attended in years, and I'm planning a comeback. So that story is kind of set in Appalachia. So the seed of it was there, and the first drafts were in Nashville, near mm-hmm. enough to the story, 3 hours or so away. Mm-hmm. And I had visited those in Byron's Rugby as a folk musician playing folk festivals for several mm-hmm. years. So that was the seed of the idea. But I think Ireland, being out in the rugged west of Ireland, wasn't too far away from the eye, from the green and the lush landscapes.
Mm-hmm. So it kind of put you in Appalachia, even though you were in Ireland.
Yeah, and then ultimately when we get in front of that laptop or whatever it is, or the typewriter in our lonely occupation, the world is right between our ears, whatever we're going to write.
So place certainly does affect, and then having some time to set aside to write. Who are some of the authors that do inspire you to write? Who are some of your favorite authors, not even just as far as dialogue goes, but...
Right. I love so many writers, but there are the ones that I can reread, and those would be, I mean, one that first comes to mind is Rick Moody, who is a fabulous writer that in many ways... I have read just about all of his books. Cormac McCarthy is in there as a favorite. Carson McCullers, James Fry, as I mentioned. And, of course, I'd be remiss not to say John Cheever.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Those are all wonderful. And I did want to... ask you to, well, I want to say this before I forget. You can get more information about Rico on this episode page on WON. There's a buy link there as well where his books can be found. You can also check out the Method and the Muse page on www.writersonlinenetwork.com. There's also a buy link there where you can buy his books. And a link to Rico's website. So he's easy to find, is what I'm trying to say here.
An internet presence.
I did want you to admit, I can't go without asking this question, and I know it's maybe mixing apples and oranges, or maybe it's an orange apple pie and that they all go together. How does music and writing, what's similar and different? You've written songs, produced CDs that mm-hmm. are your own original works. How does that compare with writing a book, and what is it? Is there something similar about it, I guess, is what I'm asking?
Yeah, I guess I can answer that twofold. Rick Moody actually said, and I can basically paraphrase or just maybe put it in my own words. That'd be better, wouldn't it? But essentially what he was driving at and what I got when I read it immediately was that the prose really should sing and should have a pentameter, a cadence to it. So not to say music to my ears necessarily, but kind of that, you know, the way poetry sings. I think the best prose does that. It is musical. It does sort of have a cadence to it, and that's sweet. But as far as songwriting to writing a novel, a lot of people who know me probably have heard me say this ad nauseum, but I think there's, for me personally, and it's different for every songwriter, but personally, songwriting to me is not a craft. Novel is a very hard craft, and your editors get involved, and it has rules, and if you're going to break them, know them. And it is more about crafting. It feels more like a workshop to me. Whereas songwriting, I don't go for this kind of like it takes me years to complete a song, or guys sitting down in a room somewhere trying to craft a song. To me, it's like Johnny Cash once said, my best songs were the ones I wrote on napkins in a diner. Mm-hmm. And personally, that's, I can say the same.
You didn't write your novels on napkins and diners?
I made it jotted down like, hey, I got an idea. When I get back, I got to run with this. But no, I mean, I just, and we live in a town that's so like, you know, craft oriented. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, I don't see it. You know, my songs have come back a day or maybe a time or two behind them, but that's more the muse.
That's the muse. That's the method.
Yeah, right. And it should be spontaneous. I think most of the songwriters I like, it would say the same.
Well, I want to say that if you're listening to this live, you can call in at 1-917-889-8080. If you have a question for Rico, or if you just have a comment about dialogue or something you have heard on the show, so feel free to call. We're going to keep rolling right along, though, unless we get a call. I did want to ask you, I think we're going to have enough time to just touch on one other area that we were talking about, and that is minor characters. Those, you know, second soldier from the left characters, if you were in a play, those characters that make their appearance and disappear quickly. Tell us kind of what your thoughts are about minor characters and writing minor characters.
Sure. Minor characters reveal the primary characters. And what better way to bring out something in one of your main characters, even if it's a brief visit from a minor character, a nurse in a hospital, say a novel where someone's facing death in a hospital, and there's just a nurse that comes in the room for a minute, and the family member that's attending to their loved one maybe has an interaction with that nurse that it may be a brief moment, but it goes a long way to revealing the main character. So I hate to say I use my secondary characters that way, but it's an opportunity. And that said, also, if you're going to bring a character into a story, we should either see that character again down the line, or they ought to serve some purpose to move the story, or again, reveal your primaries.
Do you go into a lot of detail describing your minor characters, or do you sort of, I mean, do you describe what they look like?
I think a little bit, perhaps. Maybe add an economy of words, but surely I think almost anyone I introduce in my stories gets at least a little bit of a sizing up.
Do you have any of the minor characters you've written in your books that you particularly like, or you think you wish you could have written more about them, or are there any people that sort of stepped on the stage, stepped off, and they were like leaving you wanting more?
Yeah, that has happened, and I one of them kind of went into a short story development. Mm-hmm. And
tell us about that one.
Okay, this was. Well, actually, within Sunnyville, it's a story within a story. One of the characters is talking about him and his wife's little mini vacation to Pensacola. And they're relating a story. And this actually came from, I had a line that I wanted to use. I couldn't really find anywhere to use it in a novel. So this secondary character who is being told as a story within the story is a beer drinking guzzling redneck fella on the Gulf Coast, and he in this story is seen barking at his dog.
Okay. Instead of, you know, they say it's not a story if it's dog bites man, but it is if man bites dog. So your dog is barking, or the man is barking at the dog.
Yeah,
right?
He's actually barking at the dog, which is very character revealing, isn't it?
It's very character revealing. All right. Well, that sounds wonderful. Well, I want to thank you, Rico, for joining us on The Method and the Muse. It's been a wonderful time visiting. And I am your host, Sherry Wiles, and I'm signing off. Please be sure and check out www.writersonlinenetwork.com and find out what you can do with the network around you. Thanks again, and hope you have a wonderful day and happy writing.